just because you put crypto on top of an idea doesn't inherently make it good. But in a bull market, that would be the narrative. We have crypto on top of our AI idea or a metaverse idea or a game idea. Therefore, it has a valuation that's insane and markets will pump because the liquidity is scarce and hype gets really big and all this sort of stuff. But metaverse is a very interesting area, and I think it will be very big. And we will see crypto integrations, even in the big ones.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to and watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Terry Lutz. Hey, so you know I've been involved in the crypto space for years and years already. Over a decade. I wish I had kept my 6 Bitcoin that I got when Bitcoin was $600 a coin, but I didn't. So, hey, what can you do? I think I sold it at $700 a coin and felt I'd made a killing, and such is life. Well, person you're about to hear from makes his living off the crypto space, but he's not like any other of our crypto experts you've heard from before. He's very down to earth. He's got a newsletter, over 90,000 subscribers. That in itself tells you everything you need to know. His name is Lark Davis. Lark, it is great to have you on the show. Hey, so I got a question for you. You're in the crypto space. You weren't a kid saying, gee, when I grow up, I want to be into cryptocurrencies. Probably didn't even exist when you were a kid. How did you get into this space?
Yeah, it's a great question. Well, a lot of what I do didn't exist when I was a kid. You know, I was born in the mid-80s. So growing up in the 90s, we just got internet. I remember getting BetTV back in the day, right? Those were special times of the internet. Oh, yeah. Back in the day when somebody had to be off the phone in order to use the internet at the same time. Show my age here. Crypto has been a very exciting space, and making content in crypto has been an absolute pleasure to do. Lots of challenges, of course, along the way. Wild. But I got into crypto content creation around the same time that I got into crypto investing. So I started investing in crypto first, bought my first Bitcoin, bought my first altcoins. And then I said, well, what's next? How do I get more involved in this space? And I started going down the rabbit hole, learning about things. And I found this application, which was called the Steam blockchain. And basically, it was an early social media platform on the crypto space. Stuff there. People
uploaded money.
Yeah, you remember. So I started posting articles over there, and some of them did okay. And I started really getting into the idea of doing it. And of course, any ones that I posted on crypto got really popular over there and got nice upvotes. And so I started doing more of that content because I was super interested in myself. So why not? I started answering the questions that people are asking over there and trying to dive into these topics myself. And one thing led to another. I was like, man, it's taking a long time to write all these posts out. I'm just going to start recording videos and share my thoughts that way. YouTube channel started taking off, of course, because I host them on YouTube. One thing led to another, and I didn't necessarily start out as I'm going to create a big business out of this, which has become now with the newsletter and the course sales and everything else that we're doing across the space. So we're making industrial levels of content right now. We're doing 144 shorts a month posted across 8 different social media accounts, and we're doing 20 live streams a month and 20 long form videos a month. Like we're trucking out content. Of course, now is the time, but it never started off with the intention of going in that direction. But the more I got involved in the space and the more I got sort of red-pilled on crypto, I decided that's it. This is what I want to do. And in November of 2017, a month before the all-time high, I quit my day job, went all out in crypto. 2018, I started questioning that decision during the bear market, of course. But I said, no, this is going to be big. Bitcoin's not going away. The crypto space is not going away. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity akin to being early to the internet stuff back in the 90s or the early 2000s. I said, I got to go all into this. And this is what I've done since then, going all in on crypto.
I love it. Great story. Hey, so state of crypto now, Bitcoin, Ethereum, few others. I mean, why do we need 2,500 different cryptocurrencies? And they're not currencies, but that's the name they've gotten.
It's a great question. The vast majority of cryptocurrencies are relatively superfluous, but we're also seeing huge competition. Now, we can really break things down. We have Bitcoin, which is in its own unique category, essentially, and that's a whole conversation of itself. But we start looking across the rest of the cryptocurrency space. You have early movers. You have things like Ethereum and the ecosystem building out around that. And you have competition to be number 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, you might look at the smartphone space and go, well, Apple makes iPhones and they're great. So why would we need any other iPhone or any other mobile phones? People like choices, right? My guess is that we're probably going to have four or five within a decade. We're going to have four or five blockchains that capture 90% plus of the users and value in the crypto space. We're already starting to see winners starting to form up. Doesn't mean new competitors can't come in and make a big impact and be one of the big ones. But in general, we're going to see a huge consolidation of money and resources into a very small space in the crypto area. A lot of blockchains will fail. We've already seen the vast majority of blockchains that have come out over the years fail. I could bring up all kinds of names from 2017 that people thought were going to be the new big thing. And nobody talks about them anymore because they fail. They fail to get users. They fail to get adoption. They fail to get applications built on them. You'll see the same thing happen as people iterate new ideas. New infrastructure is being built all the time. New technology is advancing all the time in the crypto space. So there is legitimate use cases for some of these new things that are coming out. Some of these new like data availability networks and stuff like that. There's a use case for that. There is an important level of infrastructure adding to crypto for that. But then you start digging even deeper into the crypto space and you see, do we really need 50 perpetual swap exchanges on chain? No, we don't. And we don't need to have five on every blockchain and every layer two that exists out there. But again, we're in a very competitive phase right now. And whoever wins from the early phase will be the winner. Exactly. Wild West stuff. And there'll be big winners out of this and huge losers.
All right. So let's go back here. Like NFTs were all the rage. Is there any freaking purpose in this world for an NFT of somebody's song or artwork or whatever that doesn't even give you any rights to use it?
Well, NFTs are a very interesting thing, and they got way overblown at the hype. Obviously, people were buying monkey pictures for $1 million. Things got a little bit out of control here, guys. But the NFT technology is actually a revolutionary technology because what we're talking about is verifiable scarcity and digital ownership on the internet. I always like to use the example of like baseball cards or something. If you could have a baseball card on chain that you know, okay, there's only five of this particular baseball player, and that's one of the ones that I have, and you can verify that. And as we're seeing nowadays with actual baseball cards, lots of fakes and stuff are coming out. They're really hard to identify. And so it's becoming a problem in the baseball card and magic card and all these things sort of world. Now, profile pictures and stuff like that, it's a much trickier area because it really depends on, okay, what culturally takes off within certain niches of the market and things like CryptoPunks, for example, because they're such a legacy set in the NFT space, people are willing to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for those. And people in crypto have such stupid amounts of money that they will pay for that. But that's just sort of the surface level of NFT technology. When you start diving down into it, there's huge applications in like the gaming space, for example, being able to own your in-game assets and trade them and have proof of where they've been. Okay, John, the famous video game player, played with this in this big video game tournament, and I want to own that because he's selling it now, and I can own that piece of history because it's important to me, which may not be important to us, but it's going to be important to somebody. And then we go to real world applications. Well, real estate deeds online, something like 1 in 3 people in the world can't prove they own their property. Well, that's always been a big
place. Blockchain, so that's voting.
Yeah,
too. That's authentication of data and authentication of assets. Hey, so what about the metaverse? Does that metaverse work with any of this stuff, or is the metaverse just a figment of Zuck's imagination?
Well, the metaverse is real and scary, and Apple Vision Pro makes me worried for my children growing up in this world. I want to see them when they're adults, not have them plugged into the metaverse. I want to visit my kids in the metaverse, but unfortunately, it might happen. Hopefully we reduce screen time enough that they don't become massively addicted to technology like everybody else. But hey, it's a tough battle to fight. Look, NFTs and crypto and metaverse, it actually all comes together. And again, as we so much see in the crypto space, a huge amount of what we're seeing is overhyped bullshit, people over promising, under delivering, failing to get users. Just because you put crypto on top of an idea doesn't inherently make it good. But in a bull market, that will be the narrative. We have crypto on top of our AI idea or a metaverse idea or a game idea. Therefore, it has a valuation that's insane and markets will pump because the liquidity is scarce and hype gets really big and all this sort of stuff. But metaverse is a very interesting area, and I think it will be very big. And we will see crypto integrations, even in the big ones, like Metaverse is on Facebook, will have some kind of crypto integrations. We saw a lot of these big social media platforms already experimenting with NFT integrations, and there'll be token integrations and all this kind of stuff. But be careful, because again, we don't need 100 metaverses.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I was like disappointed in when Facebook was going to come out with its own coin and it would pay its vendors in that coin and collect fees in that coin, all that. That I thought was really going to sweep the world. And then I think it was Janet Yellen, who was then, I think, at the Fed, head of the Fed, shot that down, and all of a sudden that idea was gone. You think these things are going to come back? You think you'll have a Tesla coin and a Google coin or whatever?
Probably. In fact, that was such a bad decision by Janet Yellen, because one of the interesting things is that stable coins and what Facebook was proposing was a stable coin. So essentially what Facebook was proposing was to make the biggest social network platform in the world become the biggest bank in the world for the US dollar. And they're so dumb in Washington that they couldn't see this is a massive win for us. We're going to extend the dominance of the dollar by decades here because everybody uses Facebook and everybody's getting paid in dollars on Facebook. And it's going to be huge for us. Instead, they shut it down. It was a massive win. American company with an American dollar stable coin. Biggest social media network in the world, dinosaurs in Washington just couldn't see it.
Yeah. And their logic for doing it made no sense. You know, money laundering, man, nobody tracks you more than Facebook. So every coin that was going to be generated would easily be traceable and whatever else. It would give them a way, way head start and maybe even eliminate the need for CBDCs.
Yeah, it would have had a kill switch attached to it. It would have been perfect. Not that I'm not a big fan of it, but you know, from the perspective of the government, it would have been a perfect tool, but they just can't see it. They're so stuck in their ways of banking infrastructure from the 1980s. Works great, guys.
Well, you got to protect the Federal Reserve, which is owned by the big banks.
Yeah,
you know, we go through times where they're blatantly furthering the interests of their shareholders, and then other times where it's not as clear, but they always do have that in mind. They always serve their master. So what about CBDCs?
CBDCs are scary, and they're coming without a doubt. Make no mistake, they're going to bring them. And I know there's been some
resistance. China's got them certain already, politicians. Right?
Yeah, China's already rolling them out. They've been testing them for years, and it's going to become very mainstream there very soon. And all I have to ask to get people to understand the terror of CBDCs is, do you trust your government? And almost unequivocally, the answer is no. So if you don't trust your government, then why would you give them a tool that they can shut off your money at any time you want? If you say something wrong on Facebook
or your social credit score plunges for no reason that you know of.
Right? You've flown on a plane too many times this year. You're not allowed to buy any more plane tickets because we have to protect the environment. Sorry.
Yeah, right.
You're not allowed to buy this bottle of vodka today because we think you've been drinking too much this month. And if that sounds crazy, China's already doing it. If you're not going to roll it out in the West, then you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, it's definitely a means of tyranny. And who knows, maybe it's the mark of the beast. You know, in the Revelation, it said that in order to do anything, you would have to have a number, right? And maybe it's it.
Everyone's going to have a number. You know, what's interesting too about CBDCs, we think about the very high level stuff like, okay, they can turn off your money. They already can do that to some extent, but turning off your money is just the tip of the iceberg.
Roger.
They can immediately tax your money. So they immediately take tax out and just immediately straight into the government coffers. But what about this? What if they set expiry dates on your money? This is really scary.
Point.
So if you have 90 days to spend your money, so you have to spend it, you can't save.
The deal is, like, the economy is not doing good. So they say, hey, here's $1,000 worth of CBDC, but you got to use it in the next 30 days.
We're trying to stimulate the economy, guys.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and just the means, the nefarious possibilities that it opens up, you know, it's
100% going to be rolled out in a crisis, too.
Yeah. So what's your feelings about precious metals? Is that a barbarous relic, or does it still have a role in our digital world?
It's interesting. I've got gold and silver. I like precious metals. I enjoy the collecting aspect, like getting the coins and the bars. Mm-hmm. And it's fun.
Sure.
That being said, gold compared to Bitcoin, for example, has been a massive underperformer. And if you like gold, then you're really going to love Bitcoin because it's got a lot of the same properties, just with more volatility. It's an earlier asset, it's a younger asset. And you think about the general use cases for why you're holding gold. You're holding gold because you want to protect your value. And Bitcoin also protects your value with more volatility. You can't look at it day to day, week to week, month to month even. You have to understand a multi-year period on it. Any of the Bitcoin that I've bought in basically the last 7-8 years is in profit now.
Sure.
And I know we've had a big run recently, but even recently, even when the price was at like $30,000, I was still in profit on my Bitcoin because I've just been consistently adding to that position over time. And it's got a lot of features that make it more interesting, of course, than gold. We know the verifiable supply of Bitcoin. We can send Bitcoin anywhere in the world. Try to take a $10 million of gold across a border with you. Good luck. Good luck. It's got to be hard. Take $10 million in Bitcoin. Easy.
Okay. So you know, the government has these restrictions. Like if you have, you can leave the country with $10,000 or more, but you have to report it. And if you don't and they find out, they'll confiscate it. And it's a whole mess. But with Bitcoin, you just have your wallet and hey, your wallet's accessible wherever you are. So it really impinges upon the government's potential for control. There's other aspects. I don't want to get into it now with the nodes, the weakness of the basic Bitcoin architecture that makes it possible for governments to do things. But we'll save that for next time. In the meantime, Lark, how do we find you? How do you subscribe to your newsletter and Twitter and all that good stuff?
You can just find me, look up Lark Davis on YouTube or Twitter. You'll find me. Make sure you just get the verified account on X. A lot of impersonators out there. And if you want to check out our newsletter, it's a great Alpha Pack newsletter. We try to give you as much news and airdrop info and NFT info and all that kind of stuff, you know, depending on your risk levels in the space. Every single week, you can find it at thewealthmastery.io.
All right. And the link to that is in the show notes to this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. So just go there and click it. While you're there, sign up for your free newsletter as well. And Lark, been a total pleasure. Really, you know, what I really like is I can see your understanding of the crypto space, very deep, very profound, and yet you're able to express it in bite-sized nuggets that many of you out there are looking for, but can't find someone who has the ability to do it. So, hey, I'm a subscriber now. I suggest everybody out there subscribe, go for the premium, not that much money. It'll definitely be worth your while. I think this is one of the best ways, Lark, to keep track of the space in ways that people who are not technically oriented, who you don't have the technical tools to understand all this, is really a plus. So appreciate you coming on. Any questions, comments, KL@KerryLutz.com. We will get you an answer quick. Lark, we'll talk to you again soon. You're a regular on the show now. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.